What issues are top of mind for cooperators across Canada? Well, the Canadian Centre for the Study of Cooperatives at the University of Saskatchewan in Saskatoon has been asking this question every year for the past 5 years. The results for 2020, a year like no other, have recently been released. I spoke with Stan Yu, the Centre's Research and Communications Coordinator, to find out more. Have a listen.
So the number one issue this year, similar to the past 2 years, so 3 years in a row, the top issue is improving awareness about the relevance of the co-op model to people like the general public, members, youth, government, and other stakeholders.
And I understand that that's a perennial issue. We're always trying to raise public awareness. So we lobby governments. We're trying to always speak about the cooperative difference. But there was some really interesting omissions, I guess, or problems concerning the pandemic and the rollout of benefits or programs once COVID took hold, that showed glaringly the lack of awareness of credit unions. Can you talk more about that?
Correct. So this really relates to the Canada Emergency Business account. I think that during the initial rollout, and this was as a response to COVID-19, that it was first offered to the large banks. And it wasn't until weeks after that credit unions were able to access that account to be able to help their members. And it was, for co-op leaders, another example of when, government policy really does favor the large banks and omit, as you mentioned, credit unions that help a large portion of our population in Canada, especially as it relates to rural and small businesses.
So there's a glaring example there. And I believe that credit union leaders were getting in touch with the government to kind of say, hey, what about us? Don't forget us.
That's right.
So that was really at a very critical time. And what are some of the suggestions to improve awareness of the co-op model? What feedback did you get?
For sure. And I think in addition to government too, which, as you mentioned, has always been a continuing challenge for co-op leaders, we also saw that two other categories of individuals that co-op leaders across Canada really highlighted were youth. We find that, according to them, the co-op membership across Canada tends to be older, and the awareness of co-ops is relatively low amongst youth, which is really a missed opportunity. Unfortunately, co-op leaders emphasize that there's really an alignment in terms of youth values that youth hold near and dear to their hearts, and ones that are also near and dear to co-ops, and that alignment really should resonate. We're talking about values such as supporting local, helping community, embedding environmental and social values at the heart of, doing business. And we're seeing that, unfortunately, there's still a gap in terms of a communication gap to reach youth and have youth be as excited about co-ops as some of the older members of our society. And the other, kind of a category of individuals is really the general public. And here our co-op leaders really asked if the co-op model is too complicated to describe easily to someone who has never heard of a co-op before. Is the sales pitch just too difficult for someone to understand, grasp, and get on board with over the course of 30 seconds? This is really a missed opportunity because according to leaders, once people learn about co-ops, they actually really like the model. There is a communication gap there. In terms of how to address this, We also, in addition to seeing challenges be identified, we also received strategies, suggestions in terms of how we can address these gaps. And really, for some, leaders proposed whether looking at co-ops as a kind of reframing co-ops as a value-based organization and really get to the values piece and what co-ops represent, as opposed to, or maybe in unison with talking about co-ops, you know, values again, such as investing in local community, values such as they actively addressing environmental issues or income inequality, having those as the sales pitch right. can really be one that puts co-ops in, you know, have people's attentions be more perked up when they hear the word co-op.
You know, to the point about youth, I know that many of the provincial cooperative associations have youth programs. They run youth camps. Young people are sponsored by credit unions often to go and attend these camps. We just heard in British Columbia this week that summer camps, residential summer camps, are going to be open in some capacity. We have the Yes Camp in BC. I know the Saskatchewan Cooperative Association has their, you know, youth co-op camp, and others as well. So I feel like the provincial associations are, and the credit unions are, doing a really good job here of working on engaging youth in a proactive way. So I'm not quite sure, perhaps more education opportunities and business programs and that in post-secondary, because I know that the younger people are really getting, from what I've reported on, tremendous opportunities to be a part of the cooperative sector in their communities. Cooperative Enterprise Council of New Brunswick has a huge youth partnership initiative and sees the value in youth getting involved and giving back to their communities, and in fact, educating the youth and developing partnerships so that maybe they can eventually take on a leadership in the cooperative sector as you know, businesses transition in terms of succession planning to perhaps the co-op model. So I don't know. I guess I feel like there's a lot of work being done. It might not be being done in the cities, but it's certainly being done in smaller locales to get youth involved. So, okay, that's interesting to hear. I think the young generation is ready and stepping up in a lot of ways, and the provincial associations are as well. Even the CMC, the National Umbrella Organization, has, you know, young emerging cooperators. So I think there's quite a bit being done there. There can always be more, that's for sure. But the young people are the future. And I think there's quite a bit awareness of the importance of youth engagement. Let's go on to the second top issue. What was the second that came out?
The second top issue, Sandy, was cooperative governance. And this is really where we see in 2020 the big, you know, notable case of MEC, or previously known as Mountain Equipment Co-op, where they were sold to a American firm, really did cause some ripple effects and a reaction across Canada amongst co-op leaders.
And what? How did that relate to governance? Was it because the board itself, first of all, they sold it out without any member consultation or members having a chance to vote? And I think there was the view that the board let down the members, and so that we need governance that's more reflective of our communities and people who are actually trained in the co-op model. Right? In co-op governance, not investor-owned a profitable organizations. Is that what transpired or you heard about?
You hit the nail on the head there, Sandy. Essentially, the Mech case really did underscore this trend of professionalizing boards, where the board of typically larger co-ops get to a point where they are more interested in having their board members have some experience with running large corporations or running large organizations with big budgets, as opposed to, you know, board members with a lot of cooperative experience. And the Mech case for a lot of co-op leaders really highlighted this loss of connection with the membership, as you just stated there. And subsequently, the reaction is a need to really double down and have our leaders in co-ops understand and uphold cooperative principles rather than see them as problematic or rather than seeing them as unnecessary or a barrier to doing business. Of course, you know, leaders also acknowledge that there are capacity issues. As board members there of co-ops, there are certain skills, knowledge that's needed, as well as, of course, time and energy. And it's difficult to find directors that have, you know, a mixture of certain professional skills that are needed, as well as have a wealth of experience with co-ops, co-op development. So really, there is a difficulty in terms of finding those unicorns, as we like to call them. But however, they did mention that this is an area where perhaps additional opportunities for board training, board education, and have, you know, directors that may not have all of the necessary skills, have opportunities to develop those skills to get to the point where we can have a, you know, boards that really are able to not fall into the kind of the trap of what happened to Mech.
Right. And we do have all kinds of programs. I know your center offers an online course on governance as well as Cooperatives First. And again, the provincial associations, governance is so important. Really understanding how to engage in governance in the cooperative setting. And the other big issue is attracting people that represent members of your community, and
exactly.
That we have more diverse boards, more inclusive, and in terms of all kinds of members of society, and that's a big thing.
And this was also raised too, Sandy. I'm really glad you pointed that out. We are increasingly hearing across many different conversations that equity, diversity, inclusion is becoming increasingly important within co-ops, and especially in terms of cooperative leadership. And subsequently, you know, these conversations have really led many organizations to reflect on, you know, what are they doing to recruit, educate, provide outreach to their membership, to provide them with opportunities to get to the board level. It may not happen overnight, but perhaps just educating them more in terms of what the board does, what other opportunities are there? Are there committees that the members can join? And really, this is part of a larger conversation in terms of how can we continue to ensure that our leadership reflects our members so that there isn't that disconnect.
Right. Okay, that's great. What was the third top issue, or the third issue from your respondents?
Coming in at number three is access to capital and financing. So here, leaders are mentioned that capital and financing for co-ops are limited and difficult to access. They cite certain kind of contextual factors, including banks don't always understand the cooperative model. Members themselves sometimes don't see themselves as sources of capital for co-ops that they're part of. as well as there are government loans available. However, there are fewer grants available for co-op development. And these kind of lack of sources for capital and financing has made it more challenging for co-ops to really look at longer term planning and priorities. So things such as technological development, machinery, research and development, those areas tend to be put on the back burner because it, you know, as we know, co-ops also compete with large-scale corporations where the profit margins are slim, and thus it makes it more challenging for them to, you know, build retained earnings by charging members more for goods and services, especially during COVID-19, where expenses are going up with organizations needing to invest more for safety and health precautions, as well as we know that this is a time where a lot of families are hit hard financially. So all this, taking all this into consideration, for co-ops, they're finding it harder to invest resources into longer term planning priorities.
I know that in Quebec, the provincial government provides a lot of support for the cooperative sector. There's a real understanding and value of the cooperative sector and in terms of promotion, support, finances. Is this some of the work that government relations needs to take on in terms of the rest of Canada, in terms of the leader's view?
I definitely think that the case of Quebec is really a glowing example and an inspiration for co-ops across Canada that don't have that same government support. More work needs to be done in the other provinces for sure.
Okay, you had two areas tied for fourth place. Why don't you tell us about those?
Sure. And both of them are tied to the top three themes that we've already talked about, too. So there really is a recurring theme here. Tied for fourth, the first one is developing strong co-op leaders. Piggybacking off of the governance theme, co-op leaders here mentioned that there is a need for leadership development in the sector. Again, you know, really trying to avoid that professionalization of boards and have more leaders that are recruited to boards of co-ops and credit unions have co-op roots. And the other theme tied for fourth is co-op development. And here, essentially, we're hearing from leaders that there are now opportunities for new co-ops in startup or early phases that could really expand, as well as looking at you know, the notion of SME conversions or small medium sized enterprise conversion, where for-profit company is experiencing difficulties sustaining their operations, and there's an opportunity for the workers to take over and turn it into a co-op. We're seeing these two phenomenon kind of creeping up and emerging. And here leaders are saying that, you know, it would be fantastic if we could have, you know, additional resources and supports, as well as technical support and guidance provided for these newer co-ops or potential co-ops to be cultivated, nourished, and then hopefully evolving to a point where they're thriving co-ops. At this time, at least in 2020, they were seeing that development piece as still being a gap. And they wonder, you know, is there more that the co-op sector can do to catalyze kind of both streams and make them take them to the next step?
Stan, exactly. What does the center do with all this information now, as we're in 2021, How does that inform the work of the center, the research that's done, or the services that are offered through the center to cooperators?
Great question. I think that the 2020 top co-op issues survey really provides a temperature check, and that it's a mirror that we can then glean insights in terms of what are the needs of the co-op sector, and subsequently, both we can amplify and through this report, hopefully that others will get a chance to read and learn in terms of what our leaders are saying within the sector. And then subsequently, what can we do as you asked? So within our organization, certainly there are additional research questions from this survey that we can do. You asked a very good question in terms of where is that disconnect between youth as well as the co-op sector. We're seeing provincial associations do fantastic work. Yet we're hearing from co-op leaders that the demographics of their membership continues to be older, and the youth aren't, there's a lack of youth voices, youth membership. And so that is a question that fascinates me. And I wonder, you know, and this is the question that research can help to answer and shed light on. The other piece, I think, too, is board training. We're hearing loud and clear that board education, board training is needed. And at the center, we're looking at opportunities to try to continue to fill that gap.
Fantastic. And I just want to give a shout out to Victoria Morris, the executive director of the Saskatchewan Cooperative Association, because she did her master's on youth engagement, ways to get youth involved in the cooperative sector. She looked at examples in Ireland, where the credit unions were great leaders in getting youth involved. And her work is very important. And we have that up on our website at eachrural.coop. And maybe you can share that with some of the leaders, because if they're not really sure of some ideas to get youth involved, she's a tremendous resource. And as I say, the Saskatchewan co-op camp program has been running since 1928. So they've been at it a long time there, and she's a great resource. Stan, thanks so much for talking to us about the work of USAS studies in reaching out to cooperative leaders to get answers. And I'm hoping that maybe in the future, they could speak to some other folks across the country and, you know, beyond the list that you have currently, broaden it, deepen it, and see if we get some interesting additional responses. That would be great from all around the country, and including the territories and the Maritimes as well. Because from the research and the reporting that we've done this year, there's lots going on. And the pandemic itself has led to the creation of new opportunities for people to work together in their communities using the cooperative model. So it will be interesting to take a look at that perhaps in the 2021 survey. Stan, we wish you all the best and all our friends at the center there. And we'll have a link to your study up on our website. And we thank you again for the research and all the support you give Each for All and everyone there. And we wish you all the best going forward. Take good care.
Thank you for your time and opportunity, Sandy. Take good care.
That was Stan Yu of the Canadian Center for the Study of Cooperatives. We'll have a link to the full report on the top co-op issues for 2020 on our website, eachforall.coop, where you can also find past episodes of our program. That's it for tonight's show. Thanks to my fellow cooperator, Joshua Peterman, for putting all the pieces together. I'm Sandy Goldman. Thanks for listening. Stay safe and have a cooperative week.
myself, why should I work so hard? Sit and dream about the days to come. Half undressed, you're soaking up the sun. Sitting here, I hope I don't get fried. 2 years ago, you know, I almost died. And yet there's nothing better for your soul than lying in the sun and listen to rock and roll. Sunny days, oh, sunny, sunny, sunny days. Ain't nothing better in the world, you know, than lying in the sun with your radio. Sunny days, oh, sunny, sunny, sunny days. Ain't nothing better in the world, you know, than lying in the sun. Nothing quite so fine as letting the sun rejuvenate your mind. Don't get me wrong, I really dig the moon, but it was 4 in the afternoon when I wrote this tune. And now the sun's about to fade away. I'm feeling better than I felt for days. You know there's nothing better for your soul. Sun and listen to rock and roll. Sunny days, oh, sunny, sunny, sunny days. Ain't nothing better in the world, you know, than lying in the sun with your radio. Sunny days.
That bean of caffeine.
Caffeine
makes you happy.
Caffeine
certainly does get you high.
Caffeine
is bound to make you snappy. You know, I know, you know what I mean. When I wake up in the morning, whoa, there's only one thing I want to do. It's to get that water boiling. I whip up a mess of brew.
So fine.
You hear those beans grind. So fine what coffee can do. Yeah, it's so,
so fine.
Fine. If it's the richest kind. Mrs. Olson, I'm indebted to you.
Caffeine.
Now what makes you happy?
Caffeine.
Certainly does get you high.
Caffeine
is bound to make. was after perfection. It was a coffee lover's dream. I wanted real strong, not too bitter. It's gotta last long and see me through. I want a real strong, but I don't want the jitters. I got to be high and cool. Caffeine, now it makes you happy. Caffeine, it certainly does get you high. Caffeine is bound to make you snappy. You know, I know you know what I mean, little soy. Cappuccino, little espresso and a lemon peel. I love that coffee beano. I dig the way it makes me feel. And in the nighttime, when the day is over and I'm tired of the work and grind, I put some coffee in my liquor, make it a little thicker, brings joy to the coffee achiever's mind. Caffeine, now it makes you happy. Caffeine certainly does get you high.
Caffeine,
caffeine is bound to make you snappy. You know, I know, you know what I mean. Is that old
caffeine?
Caffeine, you know that it's supreme.
Caffeine.
Got to have my coffee. I turn it mean.
Caffeine.
Put it on the rocks or straight up with cream. You know, I'm a fiend for that bean of caffeine.
Caffeine.
I'll take another cup.